You're listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, proudly supported by Lloyds. The Vuelta has reached its final stage, and we've been able to cover the race with daily episodes over the past 3 weeks, all recorded on location in Spain, thanks to support from Lloyds. Lloyds are major partners of British Cycling, a relationship that began last year and will continue over the coming seasons, with Lloyds sponsoring the Great Britain Cycling Team, the Lloyds Tour of Britain stage races for men and women, and the Lloyds National Championship and National Series events across a range of cycling disciplines. By supporting cycling, Lloyds wants to inspire people of all ages to get into the sport, either at a competitive level or simply for the fun and enjoyment of exploring your local area on two wheels. We're very grateful to Lloyds for their sponsorship of the cycling podcast over the past 3 weeks. It's enabled us to cover the Vuelta and also the Lloyds Tour of Britain simultaneously for the first time. Their support will continue for a few more weeks yet, but now it's time to find out what's happened in the Spanish capital on the final day of the Vuelta, so let's join Daniel over there in Spain.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, celebrating 10 years of the cycling podcast on the ground every day at the Grand Tours.
Well, Danny, we've just left the press room because, well, it became clear that this race was not going to go ahead as, I guess, the organisers hoped. And we all hoped, really. We hoped we wouldn't have any disruption today. And we've seen the protest getting out of control on television. Where are we now? Just to explain, describe the scene to the listeners, Danny.
Yeah, we're here at Plaza de Neptuno, which is so close to Plaza de Cibeles, the last finish of the Vuelta this year, as is guest traditional the last years. And we're just getting the police telling us to move right now as all the protesters are coming.
It's getting pretty frightening, to be honest. The police are sort of coming our way with batons and riot shields. So, Danny, we don't know what's happening. We don't know what's going to happen with the race now. The last we saw, the riders were still, but it looked as though there were certain riders in conversation with team cars and the race director's car, trying to find out. Well, they probably had a message at that point to say there was going to be some disruption. I can't imagine the race making it here.
Me neither. Because we're here now at Plaza de Neptuno, but this is not the only point that protests are going on, as they're going on in Atocha. Oh, yeah.
Danny, we're now on what we thought would be the finish line. I guess the race would have been about 50 kilometres from this point. Now, we don't know exactly what's happening in the race because we just left the press room. When we saw these protests down at the finish line getting out of control, Danny, well, the listeners will be able to hear the sirens, we can hear the chants. Just tell our listeners what we can see and what we can hear as well.
Yeah, here we are at Plaza de Neptuno, just so close to Museo del Prado, one of the most visited places here in Madrid.
I don't want to be facetious, but if you told me at the start of the Vuelta that we'd be here and people would be chanting for Ayuso, I wouldn't be that surprised. Or we'd be hearing Ayuso chants, but what we just heard?
Yeah, we were just hearing Ayuso chants, but not to the rider or not towards the rider, but to the president of Comunidad de Madrid, the Madrid region, who is just led by Isabel Díaz Ayuso, which is kind of funny if we can say it like that, because Ayuso is the president of Comunidad de Madrid and Almeida, José Luis Martínez Almeida, is the mayor of Madrid. So yeah, the people were chanting here just complaining about Ayuso's government over the Stages Council.
Stages Council.
Officially canceled. 2 minutes ago.
No stage winner, obviously, yeah.
Well, Danny Arribas, it is now, it's coming up to, well, it's just past 10 past 7. We started tonight's episode in a way that I didn't envisage starting tonight's episode, certainly. You heard from us, well, that was about an hour ago or 45 minutes ago now, just about 500 metres down the road from where we're currently standing. Danny, this is the spot, and we're in Plaza de Cibeles. This is a spot where I've stood for many years on the Vuelta a España, and this is where the presentation usually takes place. I envisage Danny doing a live beginning to the podcast, first part of the podcast tonight, where we would maybe hear the sort of strains of the Danish national anthem behind us. We'd be grabbing riders, team managers as they walk past. The team buses would have been parked just up the hill from where we're standing. But that will not happen, first and foremost, because there will be no podium presentation in this Vuelta a España. We heard that about 20 minutes ago. There are no riders anywhere to be seen. All we can hear, or all you can hear now, is my voice and sirens. And we're being moved by the police. And Danny, the riders and the team buses are back in their hotels. We believe what we've been hearing is that it was the riders themselves that took the decision to call things off on the road when they were confronted with news. They weren't confronted with the protests themselves, but they were confronted with news that there were serious protests in Madrid, and they also took the decision to go straight back to their hotels. That's what we believe happened anyway. That's subject to confirmation. We will confirm it later in the episode. But Danny, this is a catastrophic end to what unfortunately now will go down as a catastrophic Vuelta a España.
Yeah, it is, no doubt about it. I mean, the riders going escorted by the police to the hotels at the end of La Vuelta without finishing even the stage is not... It's not anything we were expecting, even at the point we were during the last week. But it's kind of a pity to get this end to this Vuelta, especially here in Madrid, which is not obviously my hometown, but it's the capital of the country. So yeah, it's a bittersweeter feeling right now, to be honest.
Yeah, it's certainly, there's so many strange scenes, so many strange juxtapositions we've just seen, Danny. It started when we left the press room, again, when there were about 50 or 60 kilometres to go in the race, and the news was first breaking about these protests, and we headed down the hill towards the Prado Museum, the world famous Prado Museum, and that was one of the main sort of landmarks outside which one of the main protests were congregated. And of course, well, as I said, one of the temples of art, and yet we had violent scenes outside there. One thing I should mention, and one thing I saw probably for the first time today, we've had days and days of protests, I saw quite a lot of peace signs today, as well as, you know, the odd sort of pro-Israel sign. There were obviously a lot of pro-Palestine signs and people chanting pro-Palestine chants. But so that was the scene at the Prado Museum about half an hour ago. And then as we walked up, sort of encouraged by the police to walk up the hill towards what would have been the finish line, and we were walking through the VIP area, or what had been up until now today the VIP area, and there were VIPs sort of walking with their glasses of wine or whatever else out of the area, because there have been various moments in the last 45 minutes when things have appeared to be escalating, and again there's been a sort of urgency in the demeanour of the riot police, and they've sort of encouraged us to vacate that area. But Danny, absolute disaster. Questions will be asked. Questions have already been asked. It's difficult in this situation. Obviously, we're used to, and we primarily want to be reporting on cycling, and we know how to go about reporting on a bike race. I've never reported on anything like this in my life, and it seems sort of remiss, or it seems inappropriate, to be asking the sort of usual people questions about something which is very unusual to them. I mean, we've seen all sorts of people, just as we have made our way up, Mauro Genetti, the UAE manager, Oscar Freire, and various people associated with the Vuelta a España. Of course, they, the organisation at this stage, don't want to say too much. But Danny, again, and I think the listeners will already have heard us say this, me say this at the start of tonight's episode, at this point it seems very naive, or to have been very naive, to think that this stage could have passed off without incident.
Yeah, no doubts on that, because, I mean, we were talking last days about all the protests that we were just seeing in Guijuelo, Monforte de Lemos, just like tiny towns compared to Madrid, which is a city where more than 3.3 million people lives, is the country's capital, and we are like right now we are here just in front of the city hall, escorted by plenty of police officers, and I don't know why, and I'm not sure if that was the reason, but I don't know why the race didn't have or didn't show like a solid plan B before this happened. Because I mean, when the riders were just going towards Madrid, is where everything exploded, of course. But I mean, I don't know. I think just the governors probably had more information than we had and could see this happening today.
Yeah, and there has been a bit of an information vacuum. We will bring you more tonight. As I said, this is a bit of a live podcast. We will bring you more as we get it this evening. You know, we've already heard various conspiracy theories that we're not going to sort of indulge too much about. Perhaps the Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, whether he will really be so aggrieved tonight. And in fact, we've already seen quotes from him on a Spanish news agency website where he sort of expressed his admiration for the protesters. So yeah. Anyway, that's
that quote was this morning before all of this happened today. I mean, at the morning of the final stage day. But the only official quote we have right now is from Almeida, the Madrid mayor, who has said to Radio Marca here in Spain that it is one of his saddest days as a mayor here in Madrid City.
Dani, just a few meters from us, well, I can see a very familiar face, that of Luis Angel Mate, who's joined us on many of Vuelta podcasts in much more festive moments, in a much more festive context. Of course, Luis is now retired. I just wonder whether we can get a quick word with Luis to hear what he's made of it all. Luis! Luis, te podemos preguntar unas cosas. Well, Luis, we just said that we're used to seeing you in a much more, well, a much happier context, shall we say. You're here now, you've retired, you're no longer riding the Vuelta a España, but what have you made of this? What are your thoughts standing here today?
It's incredible, no? You can imagine something like this. I'm pro-Palestine for sure. You know, the peloton is why here? Mm. Why here? It's not sense. These people stole to the peloton one of the best moments of their career after a Vuelta or a big tour. Arrive here in Madrid. It's normally a party. Yeah. It's a special moment for everybody. Why here? Yeah, why the peloton?
That's the thing, Luis. We'll think about Jonas Vingegaard tonight missing out on his red jersey presentation, and of course that's a big shame for him. But you know what it's like just to be an ordinary rider to arrive here in Madrid. What a huge moment that is for every rider. And as you say, they've been denied that. And also, if we think about how much they've suffered over the past 3 weeks.
I think it's one of the worst Vuelta of the history, and you can ask for all the peloton, every single rider, and yeah, I don't know. I don't know what can I say, because it's not normal. It's a crazy moment without sense, and I can't see nothing because I don't understand nothing.
Well, Luis, hopefully the next time we see you, it will be in a happier context. As we usually, when we see you, we have a smile on our face and you have
not
a smile
today.
On your face. But not today.
Not today, yeah. For sure, yeah.
Thanks, Luis.
Thank you very much.
Well, Dani, seeing Luis reminds us of happier times, reminds us of many times when we've stood here, as I've already said, and welcomed him and the other riders at the end of their fantastic odyssey journey around Spain. And he's someone who really, Luis, who represented the sort of unheralded riders who, well, he had a very long career. Doesn't he hold the record of Vuelta finishes, Luis?
I'm not sure about
it. He's close to. Yep. He represents, you know, that sort of cohort of riders who, you know, they may not win a lot of races, but for whom these Grand Tours, they are a highlight of their sporting lives, they are a highlight of their families' lives. And as Luis sort of hinted at there, for a lot of the guys who thought they were finishing Madrid today, that experience has been ruined, and some of them won't finish a Grand Tour again. We've spoken to some first-timers on this Vuelta a España, and it would have been a very special day for them. Let's keep our fingers crossed on their behalf that they do get another opportunity to experience the last day of a Grand Tour. Dani, we're going to try our best in this episode, because it is a full Vuelta recap review. We are going to talk about some cycling. We're going to look back over the last 3 weeks, and today we didn't have a stage. We didn't have the sprint finish that we were expecting. We had part of a sort of procession, which was curtailed. We are going to have the hamanometro, obviously, a different tone to it today, and it will be a lot shorter than usual. But just for the sake of sort of posterity and tradition, I suppose, on these episodes, we are going to have our Stage 21 hamanometro.
El Hamonómetro, de Michele Peranci.
Danny, difficult to bring any levity to today's proceedings, but I think I'm going to be able to guess what you're going to give today's stage.
You are. I mean, I don't even know what to give.
It's a zero, isn't it?
It's a zero, or even a no contest, let's say, because, I mean, I don't really know. What mark can you give to a day like this?
I was trying to think earlier, Danny, of Grand Tours, other Grand Tours that have not had podium presentations. Obviously, we've had the Grand Tours whose winner has changed post hoc because of disqualifications. We can think about the seven Tours de France of Lance Armstrong, the controversial Lance Armstrong, to give me his full name on our podcast, of course. And there have been others like that as well. We saw Oscar Pereiro earlier. Of course, he didn't get his Tour de France presentation on the day itself. He may have got it actually a bit later when he was awarded Tour de France victory post hoc. But I couldn't think of any. So, Danny, nothing to sum up, nothing to tell the listeners about as far as racing was concerned today. On this stage from Alalpardo to Madrid, it was supposed to be 108 kilometers. How does that leave us at the end, now that a full stop has been added to this Vuelta a España? Well, the GC is unchanged, as it was yesterday. Jonas Vingegaard, who has taken, I'm gonna tell the listeners exactly how long Vingegaard's Vuelta a España lasted, 72 hours, 53 minutes, 57 seconds. He's the winner. João Almeida has finished second, 1 minute and 16 down. Tom Pidcock, third, 3 minutes, 11 seconds down. That's his first Grand Tour podium. Of course, Jai Hindley, fourth, 3 minutes and 41 seconds down. Matthew Riccitello, fifth, 5 minutes, 55 down. Danny, we'll just complete the top 10. Pellizzari is 6th, 7 minutes, 23 down. Kuss, 7th, 7:45. Felix Gall, 7:50. Torsten Tran, who was one of the stars of this Vuelta a España, 9:48. And Matteo Jorgensen closes out the top 10, 12, 16 down. Points competition won by Mads Pedersen, as we knew it would be. We have known for several days, I would suggest. Similar story, although it was a much closer affair with the King of the Mountains competition. That was won by Jay Vine. And in the white jersey competition, it was Riccitello who prevailed after that fantastic ride yesterday. In the teams competition, Danny, not one we often mention, but I suppose most people could guess how that one went. Won by UAE Team Emirates by 23 minutes from Visma Lisebike. Danny, usually at the end of the Hamonometro, we have quotes from the riders who are heavily involved, or direct sportives who are heavily involved in today's proceedings. That cannot happen today because the riders are all back at their hotels. So as I said earlier, we're kind of floundering, scrambling for people who can bring a little bit of perspective to this. We found someone, Jesus Guzman, who has done... ¿Cuántas vueltas?
Esta era la 40.
40 vueltas. He's the man on the back of the motorbike with the blackboard, who's kind of responsible for giving timings in the race in real time. As I said, 40 vueltas. So he has seen good ones, he's seen bad ones, he's seen terrible ones. Jesús, cuéntanos lo que ha visto hoy, en el día de hoy, en esta vuelta.
Yo lo que he podido ver en esta vuelta no tiene razón de ser, no tiene nada que ver. Yo...
Well, Jesus was just telling us that the organizers were just trying to shorten today's stage, or to reorganize the final circuit here towards Madrid city center, but it was not possible at all. So, yeah, it is a pity and a shame to have this final of La Vuelta.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Danny, as is customary in these end of Vuelta episodes, we have moved. We've moved in space. Have we moved in time? No, we're still going in chronological order. Danny, well, the time is now 9:01. We are in the... Danny, is this barrio called Letras?
El barrio de las Letras, yeah.
It's very fancy, swanky, and nice. This is usually, in fact, in this bar, I recorded my last podcast of the weather last year with Rob Hatch. We're outside a cocktail bar called Hemingway. We didn't want cocktails, but we found ourselves at this bar, and we were informed they only have cocktails. There's a quote from Hemingway outside: "I drink to make other people more interesting," says Hemingway. Danny, I hope that doesn't apply to you tonight, but maybe we should have drunk more. Should we have drunk more to make this welter more interesting? I think we drank enough, although we in moderation nonetheless, but I do think we drank enough on this Vuelta a España, and I think we'll probably drink enough tonight as well. Danny, what are we going to do? How are we going to proceed? Because one of the big challenges in this Vuelta a España has been untangling the sporting and the non-sporting, and we're aware, and we thank the listeners for our patience. There'll be more formal thanks later in the episode, but we thank listeners for indulging us, if that's the right word, being patient with the fact that we have seen it as our duty to tell you, mindful of our privileged position as one of the very few media outlets on the ground, that we have had to tell you what's going on. But we realize that a lot of you would rather, well, I think all of us would rather have been talking about cycling, and most of you would probably have rather we had spoken a little bit more about cycling on the road and racing. So in that, against that backdrop, Danny, I think that we should now pivot a little bit, park the protest for just a moment, and talk about the race that was, Danny. I'm going to give a bit of a recap, and then we're going to discuss the relative merits of this edition of the Vuelta a España compared to others that we have seen. So, Danny, the Vuelta a España kicked off with a Gran Salida that was also a Grande Partenza in Turin, Italy, otherwise known as the City of Magic. Jasper Philipsen's sprint wizardry there brought him a red jersey to go the Maillot Jaune. He claimed in Lille on stage one in the Tour. In this race, the second day took us into the mountains and the domain of the GC men. Jonas Vingegaard's first win since the Volta al Algarve in February also gave him the Maillot Rojo at Limone Piemonte. Life had been giving David Gourdou lemons in recent months, but he made lemonade to give us a second win in a row by a second sprint win in a row by a pure climber at Ceres. Adding to the confusion, a sometime sprinter, Ben Turner, triumphed the following afternoon in a stage that had traversed the Alpine chain via the second highest summit of the whole race. Finally, on stage five, on day five, the race returned to Spain, but it was not a happy homecoming. Israel's team time trial was impeded by pro-Palestine protesters. As we suspected at the time, one of the defining themes of this year's Vuelta was served. UAE prevailed that evening, and yet their apparent disunity would also become a through line in some observers' narratives for this race. Vingegaard had retained red, but from Denmark it was about to pass to Norway. Torsten Trayen's second place behind adopted local boy in Andorra, putting him in the lead. Vingegaard had lost the lead, but also a rival for overall victory. Juan Ayuso conceded 11 minutes in Andorra and told the Spanish media, I include you in this, Danny, his GC bid was a figment of their imagination. Shame on you and your colleagues, Danny Arribas. The following day, we all scratched our heads as Don Juan Ayuso, that is, delivered a virtuoso performance and victory at Huesca La Magia. Zaragoza was supposed to give us echelons on stage 8. We didn't get them, but Philipsen the whirlwind swept through. Speaking of forces of nature, 24 hours later, Jonas Vingegaard proved he was the Vuelta's alpha by soloing to victory at Valdescaray. Next, the Dia de Descanso, the rest day. But there was no rest for Ayuso, portrayed as the wicked deserter of Almeida. And now thrown under the bus, he said, by a team press release announcing his departure. That storyline kept us entertained, titillated for one afternoon, the time it took for Vine to add his second stage win. Bilbao, though, brought more protests, huge this time, and a stage without a winner. Under mounting pressure, Israel Premier Tech's owner Sylvain Adams dug in his heels, as would the Vuelta's roadside opponents. Ayuso's yo-yo trajectory continued with his second stage win in Cantabria, the prelude to UAE sixth with Almeida on Liangliru the next afternoon. Marc Soler, the Spanish god of chaos, then brought his and his team's winning brand of anarchy to La Farapona for three in a row and a magnificent seventh. Almeida had done everything except drop Vingegaard. The double Tour Champions advantage had barely budged since Valdescaray. Another unerring Dane, Mads Pedersen, won finally in Monforte de Lemos. But the size and volume of protest that day presaged what came next. Another demonstration that blocked and ruined another stage in Galicia. This time we at least had a winner, Egan Bernal, though no podium ceremony. Again, a sign of things to come. A Giulio Pellizzari stage win had loomed large in our crystal ball for a while, and Giulio arrived at El Moredero. Almeida kept on trying, but still couldn't dislodge Vingegaard. A third Philipsen win in Guijuelo. Then we had our final showdown, our day of reckoning on the Bola del Mundo. Here, Vingegaard completed his own hat-trick and sealed overall victory before the Vuelta's doomsday in Madrid. And Danny, that was the 90th Vuelta a España, a troubled, very, very troubled edition. And well, let's without further ado, have our own little jamonometro for this edition of the Vuelta a España, the 2025 Vuelta a España. I was veering towards a 2 even before today. I think I'm definitely, well, I think I'm between a 1 and a 2 now.
I think I'm going for the 2, just to be a little bit positive. But yeah, it's kind of a difficult one to give, because, I mean, given the notes we were given each day for the jamonómetro, I think it's a low nota, let's say, in Spanish. But yeah, we cannot give more than 2 to this world overall.
Danny, we were having this conversation in the car a few days ago. You said, well, we're actually giving the stages quite high marks.
Yeah.
And it seems as though this Vuelta a España has been less than the sum of its parts. Overall, we've been pretty disappointed, although there have been some good one-day races. We're going to talk a bit later about some of our more peculiar likes and dislikes, as will other people who have been involved in this Vuelta a España. But generally speaking, I think it's telling, and for me, it's always telling when the battle for stage victory and the battle for GC, they kind of take place on two parallel tracks and there isn't much overlap. And I don't like that, and I generally think that makes for a poorer race. And, we can talk in a minute maybe about the reasons why I think this has been a poor edition. Obviously, in that 1.5 or 2 or 1 out of 5, the off the bike affairs have played a huge part.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think right now that La Vuelta has officially finished, it is fair for us to not give an approval for La Vuelta. I mean, 2.5 over 5 is just an approval note, so I think a 2 is a good one, because I think the ending of this Vuelta has showed us that probably we were right about our thinkings of the race.
Yeah, I know Michele Pilacci is probably listening to us growling at his his phone at the moment, or whatever device he listens to us on, because I'm sure Michele, ever enthusiastic and ever positive as he is, would probably have still, in spite of today's events, given this a 4.9. He probably would have taken off the 0.1 for what happened today. I suppose if you go back to Turin, our expectations had already been managed somewhat and maybe lessened somewhat by the fact that a month before the Vuelta started, Tadej Pogacar announced he wasn't going to take part. So this sort of titanic rematch that we thought we might get, or certainly based on the two riders' race programs that they announced at the start of the year, we thought we would get between Pogacar and Vingegaard after the Tour de France, that wasn't going to come to pass. So what could we look forward to? Well, I think Juan Ayuso was the one guy who we felt could probably, at his best, challenge Vingegaard. And we also thought that this could be a bit of a watershed in Ayuso's career. The moment when he stepped up from the sort of second tier of Grand Tour riders to the first tier. And at that point, Danny, we didn't really feel... Well, maybe you have a different perspective, being a Spanish and maybe more abreast of what was being said in Spain. But I didn't really feel as though there were any excuses being offered for Ayuso not being ready. I sort of thought, well, he's had the whole summer after the Giro d'Italia. He hasn't had any major injuries or illnesses that I was aware of. And I fully expected him to be very ready when he came here. And also determined, because we knew that they were going to line up with Almeida and Ayuso. Almeida and Ayuso, we ended up talking about in a different context. We ended up talking about two different people, two politicians. But we knew that, I mean, those two have ridden together on other occasions this year. And there has been this sort of, I don't want to say a cold war between them or a phony war. But it's almost been the battle for the sort of vice presidency behind Tadej Pogacar in terms of the UAE hierarchy. And I suppose up until... this Vuelta a España, it had been pretty close. We also have to remember that at the start of this Vuelta a España, rumours had started to appear about Juan Ayuso leaving UAE at the end of the year. Hmm. But we weren't sure about that. As far as we knew, Juan Ayuso could have been going into this Vuelta a España and sort of riding for his future as a leader. So there was every reason to expect him to be ready, motivated, and... as I said, to be Jonas Vingegaard's big rival and for us to get a really exciting GC battle. It didn't really happen.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
What is tricky for me in all Ayuso's case is that probably before the Vuelta a España happening, I mean, during the Tour de France, when we still didn't know if Tadej Pogacar was coming to La Vuelta, what we get here in Spain, at least in the Spanish media, is that Ayuso was pushing hard to be in La Vuelta, as well as his Giro was not that good and he has to the DNF. But at the same time, when Ayuso finally did La Vuelta and he started here, and I mean, we heard from him that he was not at his best level. I mean, he didn't have...
When did you hear that, Dan? Because details are important. Because we went through this...
From him or from his entourage,
okay, but we went through this when on the day when... Yeah. Well, on the first day when he lost time in Pau, he talked about, again, to use the words that I did in the summary a minute ago, him sort of suggesting that this GC bid was a figment of the Spanish press's imagination. But I went back and looked at the quotes that he gave after San Sebastian and Getxo, the two races that he'd done. And it was pretty difficult to sort of decipher in there, or to say with any certainty that he'd been clear about that. I don't think
it was not possible to make it clear.
Yeah, I think he'd been ambiguous.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why it was kind of a surprise for us, the Spanish media, to his words afterwards. I mean, just kind of blaming Spanish media of what we could expect from him, because I mean, was the UAE team Emirates team who were just saying all the time that it was co-leaders between him and Almeida. He was not saying no to that. I guess it's difficult to say no if the team says that. But just after his first very bad day here at La Vuelta, he started just talking about his performances in another way. I mean, talking about he didn't have this altitude camp before La Vuelta. His entourage is as well, just sliding the not very good feeling of Juan, that not having the altitude camp neither for the World Championship and the European Championship that are coming after this Vuelta. So I don't know, it's tricky with all this stuff, because before La Vuelta, the only thing we get is that Juan was pushing so hard to be here, and once he's here, it's another story.
Indeed, indeed. And I suppose the other side of the coin, as far as UAE were concerned, and we will talk about Jonas Vingegaard, because I don't want to dwell too much on the guys who didn't win at the expense of the rider who does deserve a lot of credit for ultimately becoming the winner of this Vuelta a España. But the other, of course, co-leader, as they put it, UAE put it, was João Almeida. And there can be no criticism of the way João Almeida rode. I mean, he was impeccably consistent in spite of what we heard, the sort of rumours the last few days, kind of confirmed by UAE that he had been ill. And he really showed his best self pretty much every day. There weren't any crises. João Almeida did what João Almeida is capable of. And again, it seems sort of churlish and slightly unfair after a really fantastic performance. Probably the best, I think certainly the best Grand Tour performance of his career. But people will ask, where next for João Almeida? Is he ever going to win a Grand Tour? When you think about the next sort of couple of years and who's likely to lead the various sort of super teams in those Grand Tours, then you kind of think that Almeida is going to be restricted to one opportunity a year if he stays at UAE, which we think he will for the foreseeable future. He'll certainly be there next year. And I think his future as a would-be possible Grand Tour winner really hinges on the good fortune or the misfortune of the riders that other teams choose.
Yep, absolutely.
They choose for particular Grand Tours. Because we can, you know, we do get these sort of relatively weak Grand Tours where we get none of the sort of big three or the big four or big two. And they will definitely be an opportunity for João Almeida. I don't really see him being more suited to the Vuelta as opposed to the Giro. João Almeida, we've talked about it a lot. His Achilles heel is simply that he can't really match the accelerations of the best riders. And that's going to be the same. Well, that is the same on long climbs and short climbs. And that has prevented him ultimately from winning this Vuelta.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would even reduce the name of the riders to just two riders. Mm. One of his teammates is Tadej Pogačar, and the other one, of course, is Jonas Vingegaard. I truly think or truly believe that João Almeida could beat, or neither next year or in the future, the other riders. Mm. I mean, the Remcos, the Roglic, and these kind of riders in a 3-week Grand Tour. Of course, it's going to be difficult for him, because I know we all know the type of rider he is. But the only disappointing for me with João Almeida in this Grand Tour, in this Vuelta, is what we have been talking about the last days. I mean, I don't know how to call it, the attitude. I mean, the lack of fire in his eyes is what, yeah, I've been saying the whole week. But
the lack of discernible fire in his eyes. There may be that, yeah, fire may exist. I mean, certainly you don't get to where he has got to
for
in
sure
his career without being ambitious and determined. But sometimes it's been, and the race, well, I think we've talked about this, the spectacle has suffered from the lack of that obvious, burning, absolutely white hot ambition in Juan Ayuso's eyes. João Almeida's eyes.
Yeah, but there were 2 days just in this world, only 2 days, in which I saw that fire in João Almeida's eyes, which were Angliru, when he tried so hard to gain time on Jonas Vingegaard, and to beat, actually, Jonas Vingegaard, which he did. And the other day was Valdezcai after the stage, when he lost that many time with the Dane, and he complained about the lack of support from his teammates, which is something you can expect from a leader who is really wanting to win a Vuelta.
Indeed, Danny. So that was UAE. I think we've spoken enough over the course of the 3 weeks about their tactics, whether they rode in the right way. As we said yesterday, they at least tried something different on the penultimate stage. It ultimately produced identical results. Whether they would have whether they would have produced different results if they had done that consistently, whether they had decided that was the way to fatigue Jonas Vingegaard and they'd done it in every single mountain stage. I don't know. No one will ever know the answer to that question, but certainly it didn't work on this occasion. Danny, Jonas Vingegaard, he came out of the Tour de France, I suppose, a beaten man, although again, this was seen through the prism, really, of Tadej Pogacar's superiority. And everything that Jonas Vingegaard does, really, is held up against the sort of, well, the prism or the kind of mirror of whatever Pogacar is doing. And it's unfortunate, but this is the way, ultimately, bike riders' careers are judged. There are one or two in every generation who are kind of the nearly men or the bridesmaids. I don't think that's fair. It's certainly not fair to call Jonas Vingegaard an eternal bridesmaid because he's not that. He's won two Tours de France. He's now won a Vuelta a España. I think he'll win Giro d'Italia. And as I said to you yesterday, I think what you have to acknowledge about this performance by Jonas Vingegaard is just brilliant execution. And again, what we said about João Almeida, consistency in the face of some adversity. I think there have been days when Vingegaard hasn't been at his best, hasn't been at his freshest, he's been tired after the Tour de France, yet he still executed to the degree he needed to win this race, which is no mean feat. And you know, you look at guys like Pogacar and Vingegaard and their record in Grand Tours and their consistency in Grand Tours, and you compare that to someone like, and I'm not picking on Felix Gall or a Jai Hindley, but there you will often, you know, we've often seen sort of bigger peaks and troughs, sort of a fourth place followed by a Grand Tour where that rider has really struggled. And I think that Vingegaard and Pogacar don't have that simply because they have more margin, simply because, well, they're not as prone to getting ill, because they don't go quite as deep into their reserves. They don't have to go quite as deep into their reserves as those other riders. And I think that just tells you that Jonas Vingegaard is easily the second best rider in the world, or second best stage racer in the world. And I think he's proven it again. And do I think that what we've seen over the last 3 weeks proves that he's going to make it even harder for Pogacar next year at the Tour de France? I think that's maybe it. That's maybe a bit of a leap. But certainly, as we keep saying, he deserves a lot of credit. His team deserve a lot of credit for just a really sort of professional and well constructed performance over the 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And not just because of what we saw here on La Vuelta, but the whole year one thing, because I have the feeling that UAE, of course, as at least for me, the best rider in the world in Pogacar, but without Pogacar riding, I think Visma has shown in this Vuelta and in the last year, for instance, that they have the best block, I mean the best team on the world. It is not easy to ride like that and to show that support on Vingegaard's shoulders stage by stage against teams like UAE, Bora, Lidl Trek, and I mean, it's something that probably UAE, even with Pogacar sometimes, but without Pogacar, is not showing that often.
One thing, maybe I'm sort of extrapolating too much here, but one thing I think we may have seen the end of with Visma Lisa Bike is the multi-leader strategy. And obviously we talked about UAE's lack of focus and sending riders off down the road, getting stage wins. And we have seen over the past couple of years a few occasions where Visma Lisa Bike have gone into Grand Tour sort of seeming to hedge their bets, at least in the media, sort of saying, well, we've got Vingegaard, but we also want to keep, for example, at the Tour de France, they said we wanted to keep Simon Yates in the general classification for as long as possible. It has worked. It worked at the Vuelta a España in 2023. But what I think we've seen here is the benefits, the virtues for them of a really, really focused strategy. And obviously that's high risk, because if Vingegaard crashed out after three stages here, then they would have been left with not much as far as GC is concerned. But I get the sense, just from talking to them and listening to them in interviews, that maybe they feel now that the sort of single-pronged approach is always going to be the best approach, certainly when they have Vingegaard in the team. Danny, just on Jonas Vingegaard, today we're going to have a different kind of Encuentro del Día. Last Encuentro del Día, I sort of teased this, promised it yesterday. It's with a gentleman who's become a friend of mine over the last couple of years. He works in the Danish media, but he used to be a rider. And in fact, he used to be a teammate of Jonas Vingegaard back in the days when Jonas Vingegaard, or before Jonas Vingegaard, became famous. His name's Christian Moorberg. And he did ride at that time alongside Vingegaard with a team called Cola Quick. He was there, so to speak, when Vingegaard got discovered. And nowadays, Christian is the director sportif of Cola Quick, which has become a bit of a sort of talent factory for Danish cycling. Here is today's Encuentro del Día with Christian Moorberg about the winner of this year's Vuelta a España.
El Encuentro del Día. The meeting of the day.
So Christian, let's go back to the start. Your contact with your connection to Jonas Vingegaard. This story involves TJ Van Garderen. That's the main thing I remember. But just remind me of the first time you heard his name, first time you became aware of this guy.
Yeah, I was a trainer or coach in my local club back in 2014. I was a small guy from Thy. A little guy come to the club and start in the category C. And we have category C, B and A in Denmark, and A is the best. And then he was moving up to B and then go to the next year for the A class, the best class in Denmark. And then we go to the special training camps in Kalbe like always. And we're supposed to do the... We normally do the time trial of the Colorados. So we have our own goals, our own watts per kilo, you know, all the tests.
Hang on, and just to interrupt, you're a cyclist at this point. You're not a DS.
Yeah, I was cyclist still. I finished my career in 2019, and before there, I was teammate with Jonas after in 2018. But before that, we have this always the time trial up the Colorados, and we were doing it by ourselves. And then we got a very special time for this little guy. He was nearly close to beat TJ Vergara's KOM at that point. So the day after we have the rest day, we were supposed to do this lead-out train for Jonas. So because it was funny, if we were so close to beat TJ Van Garderen, and then we need to try, and we beat him and got the KOM, and the rest is still story. But after that, there was a lot of teams connecting with our sports director Christian Andersen, and one of them was Christian Niermann. So from that time on, I also had a special relationship with Rikisha and of course with Jonas, because he went to Jumbo Visma and go to the World Tour team.
Had they simply seen it on Strava, or TJ Van Garderen contacted? I can't remember the story. TJ Van Garderen contacted Grisha.
Yeah, we had the post on the Instagram and our Facebook that we beat TJ Van Garderen from the BMC. And then TJ was texting us, "I will come back and beat you." But he didn't. So the time was good, but we have also beat it a lot of times after that one. But of course, when Jonas won the Tour de France, it was the big story, the step from the fish fabric in Tista to the World Tour to Grand Tour winner. That's a special story.
And so let's just get the mechanics of this right. So there's an Instagram story with TJ Van Garderen tagged in.
Yeah, we tagged TJ and the BMC team. So we were like, "Hey, we beat you." And they were doing the train. I remember we took this overview from the Strava and saw there was five BMC guys driving all the way from the city in the bottom, Ibia, in the bottom of the Colorado. And then we thought, okay, we also have to do that. Then we were 14 guys in front of Jonas. So, yeah, it's quite funny. But from now on, it's a mark from our team. We always do it every time we're in Spain. We will do this train lead out to.
It's become famous, hasn't it? And some of the guys who have since beaten the record, have come close to the record, have become sort of, well, social media stars. Who might become world tour stars.
Yeah, we have. First of all, it was Juan Ayuso was beating the time. Then we went there again, and we were beating that time with Peter Oxenberg, and also the second guy from our team, Axel, was also beating Juan Ayuso. And then a year after, it was Tadej Pogacar was beating us, so we were like, okay, now it's impossible. But we were about 14 seconds or something like after Tadej Pogacar, world's best rider ever. And it's special for our team. It's also bring a lot of, for us, it's very important to develop the guys, bring them into a teamwork. It should be a team where we have all these things together. We win together, we lose together. This is very special. Everybody's there for bringing the best time up the Colorado.
And so you spent a bit of time with Jonas, obviously, back in the day. We think we know him a little bit, but what sort of frustrates you, or what do you think people don't understand about Jonas that they should understand?
He's funny. He's really funny, yeah. But when we are here talking with him in the mix zone or with the microphone, he's also like a little bit shy of the press, but he's even better now than when he started at the World Tour. He's calm, he's funny, he's very easy guy, smiling, always joking. When we visit him at the rest days, there's also very bad humor. He's a very bad humor guy, but I think if you know all our jokes in Danish, you will think we are very bad jokes. So he's funny.
Okay, so that's about his character, Christian. Give us one fact, one thing that we don't know about Jonas Vingegaard that you do know.
He's even more better in crosswind than all the other guys in the GC.
He's better or worse?
Better. He's, because when you develop in Denmark, it's a lot of wind. When all these races we have been through, like when we were teammates at the Kullerquick, there was not many mountains. It was like the Normandy, the Bretagne. He's so good technical. He's also a winner. He got a big killer instinct. So if you think he's an easy guy that just don't care about beating Pogacar or not, that's totally wrong. He's absolutely a winner.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Well, Danny, that is Vingegaard's first Vuelta a España victory, which, of course, unfortunately, he wasn't sort of recognised for on the podium this evening. That's that, I don't want to say dealt with, but we have discussed what a fantastic performance it was by Vingegaard and Visma Lisa Bike, so congratulations to them. I just want to pivot back now to breaking news, if there is any, Danny. We've been sitting here for about an hour now, and at the time we did start recording this part of the podcast, there'd been no statement from the Vuelta organisation, and this was still a very confused situation. Danny, you've been monitoring the news in the last hour. What's been said? What's been going on?
Well, the biggest news is that there are not much news, because we have seen a lot of Spanish politicians just taking advantage of the situation, just giving responsibilities to the one who are on the other side, let's say. So I think that's nothing very important to stand out right now. But the only thing that we can say is that hundreds of people are still at this hour, 9:30 here in Madrid, protesting, even with La Vuelta stage being cancelled, like, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 hours ago. So it's something that maybe is not that related with cycling, but maybe with other much stuff.
Danny, I've got some breaking news. One of the riders who was involved in the Vuelta a España today, racing the Vuelta a España today, has sent us a rider's eye dispatch of exactly what he saw. I'm talking about our good friend, I'm going to call him that. I'm going to take the liberty of calling him our good friend, Jack Haig of Bahrain Victorious. Here's Jack from his hotel room, I believe, about half an hour ago.
Yeah, I guess today there was a lot of uncertainty in the peloton regarding how the race would eventuate throughout the day. Obviously, we'd had a few incidents with the protesters throughout the Vuelta, and I think everyone, including the organizer and the UCI, as well as the riders and the teams, knew today it was probably going to be the hardest day to control and have a normal race. All the information that we got from the race organizer before the start was that they were fully committed to try and do the race as normal. They did say they had three different route options to arrive into Madrid. And in the end, we ended up using one of the different route options and not the one that was originally planned or that was on the GPX file that everyone got. And then obviously, once we started to get closer to Madrid, this peloton started to speed up a little bit more, as is normal when we start to arrive to the final circuit of the last stage of a Grand Tour. And then we started to hear information that maybe the race would only be 1.5 laps on the final circuit when we arrived. And then soon after that was probably the images that everyone saw on the TV where the protesters ran out onto the street and blocked some of the riders, including myself, which was caught behind. And basically from that point on, they stopped the race 300-400 meters further up the road. And then, yeah, it all sort of started to get a little bit out of hand. And we ended up sort of being directed towards the palace, the Royal Palace, and the grounds there. And basically all the team cars and the riders got put into this area that was deemed sort of more of a safe area. And we kind of sat there for a little bit waiting for some information on what to do. And eventually we heard the information that the race was going to be cancelled and that we all get into the team cars and just go back to the hotel, basically. And it was a bit of a logistical mission for the police and all the organizers to try and arrange safe travel for everyone outside of the area to get to the outskirts of Madrid to then get back to the hotel. But it's a bit of a sad way to finish the Vuelta, I think. I think especially for Visma, they missed a nice opportunity to enjoy the final stage with Jonas in the red jersey. And I think also just for cycling and the sport in general, that it's a shame that we did today's stage and that it ended that the way that it did. Obviously, I really respect the right to have free speech and the message that people are trying to get out there. It's just a shame that it's coincided with a sporting event that we all enjoy and were involved in. And I just hope that in the future we can find a better balance of how to deal with these kind of circumstances. It's not nice, I think, for anyone, for the riders, for the teams, for the sponsors, for the race organizers, etc. So I just hope that we can learn from this and go forward and make maybe smarter decisions in the future, and that we don't have to deal with these kind of things very often, or if at all.
Well, Danny, the protest that have marred this Vuelta a España, an unavoidable topic, and today, obviously, as on other occasions, certain protesters definitely overstepped the mark. It doesn't even really bear repeating, but we will repeat it. You know, we sort of respect and will always defend and support the right to peaceful protest. And we certainly saw some protesting today that was far from peaceful. And it has ruined the race, as already discussed with Luis Angel Mateo. Danny, not too much more we can add on this, except to say that once again, and I was going to come onto this in our sort of likes and dislikes, I'm pretty disappointed, miffed by the absence, at least in our eyes, at least as far as we're concerned, the absence of any diplomacy on the part of the UCI. While we're walking here today to this bar to continue our recording of this sort of piecemeal episode, I was sort of saying to you, Danny, that one thing that's come through clearly to us in conversations, various sort of off-the-record conversations we've had this evening, this afternoon, is that the stakes for the Vuelta organisation today were extremely high, including probably financial stakes were very high. They really needed this stage to go ahead and to be completed. And when the stakes are that high, when the vested interests are so great, then emotion tends to prevail over reason. And this is also why the UCI needs to be more present, more active in a crisis situation, in my opinion. The Vuelta organizers, I mean, we talked yesterday, Danny, about the sort of impromptu meeting that took place on the podium after everything had happened and been cleared away on the Bola del Mundo. Javier Guillén, Fernando Escartín, Kiko García. And it's sort of the fire. I mean, Danny, you might tell me otherwise, but I'm pretty sure among those five or six people who were there, they are pretty much all of the main decision makers, as far as the Vuelta a España is concerned. And you bear in mind the sort of, and it comes down to practicalities as well, the sort of days that those guys have been having over the, and with all the stress. And, you know, they've been in the car for sort of 7 hours a day. And then they're talking about security until probably late at night. And they're having meetings and they're responding to questions. And I would sort of question whether they are in a fit state to take some of the decisions that need to be taken, and whether some of the load shouldn't be taken off them. I mean, Danny, we've heard, again, I don't want to go into conspiracy theories and too much speculation, but we've heard all sorts of things today about the political pressure on the organisers to go ahead with today's stage. And it may be that they are even smaller pawns, the Vuelta a España and Guillén and Escartín and Kiko García, they're even smaller pawns than we realise in a huge political game. I'm not sure. However, nothing will convince me that the UCI shouldn't have a big voice and a big role in this, and I am not aware of them having used that role to its full effect.
No, absolutely no. They have not. I mean, just a moment ago, we were just talking off the record about the official statements that the UCI has showed to the world during this La Vuelta crisis, because it is what it is. It's a crisis of one of the three Grand Tours, as we have been saying this week. And just checking the, not just the UCI, but the David Lapartien statements last week, last thing we have is just a 4 days ago statement on the UCI president on X, on Twitter, just, I mean, almost praying for the security in La Vuelta to make the, or to let the riders safe, to keep the riders safe, and to live in peace and whatever. I mean, it is okay, but we can expect a bit more from the UCI president, at least in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think, as here in La Vuelta, all the organizers, all, not on the record, but maybe most of the times off the record, they're just taking a little bit off their responsibilities and saying that the main responsibility is on UCI shoulders.
Yeah.
Probably we could expect the UCI to say a bit more about this.
Yeah, and Danny, maybe I'm misunderstanding the role of the UCI president, but I really feel he should have been there this week, the whole week, and he should have been standing almost physically at the organizers' side. What we did have today was the mayor of Madrid in the car, in the team car, Ayuso,
yeah. Isabel Díaz Ayuso.
Yeah. In the car, and if David Lapartien was here today, I wasn't aware of it. I may be wrong about that. Danny, a few other things to mention just in a sort of final summing up before we get on to our more kind of idiosyncratic likes and dislikes. The route itself, that was sort of controversial, contested. I think it was quite an unusual route that looked difficult at first glance on paper. The first half looked pretty difficult. I'm sure the riders found it pretty difficult, but I don't think it lent itself to a great spectacle. Too many climbs that weren't steep enough. I feel as though the race has gone away a little bit from what has been its identity over the last 10, 15 years under Guillén, i.e. the Rampas Inhumanas. And climbs around which there is a lot of hype even before we've got there, a lot of sort of anxiety on the part of the riders and excitement on the part of us, the watching audience. I felt that it looked like a route that had been designed by someone who was a little bit jaded, a little bit bored. Anyway, that might be unfair, but that was my feeling. Danny, Tom Pidcock and Jai Hindley as well, we should include in this. Really good performances by them. I know Jai Hindley would have liked to finish on the podium. Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe expect podium finishes now in Grand Tours with the ambitions that they had. But I thought Hindley rode a brilliant race, to be honest. And, we discussed yesterday that this might be the Grand Tour that suits Pidcock the best.
Yep.
He was rewarded, rightly so, for that attack in Bilbao. Not with a stage victory, but I don't think Jai Hindley can have any sort of regrets or about his own performance in this Vuelta a España. You know, I even thought Félix Gall rode a really good race. After the Tour de France that he'd done, okay, faded a little bit towards the end, but to to finish, where did he finish in the Tour de France? He finished fifth overall in the Tour de France, to back it up with an eighth place, which at times looked like it could have been a fifth or sixth place in the Vuelta a España. I think that's really impressive. And okay, I don't think Félix Gall is ever going to win a Grand Tour, but he's under a lot of pressure, as anyone who's watched the Netflix series and Decathlon, their new leadership, will know. And I think he can be very proud of himself after this Vuelta a España, as can Matthew Riquitello.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, maybe all the Félix Gall pressure that he has, of course, in France, as we all know, maybe it's going to change next year, right? And that pressure is going to other person's shoulders, as Paul Suissas may be concerned. But yeah, I mean, I think Jay Hindley cannot be like blaming himself by the Vuelta he did. I'm so intrigued with him, what is going to happen next year, because I mean, is he going to be like in the A team with Renko, Roglic, I mean, helping those at the tour, or even Lipovic after the tour we saw from him, or is he just maintaining himself in his last year's contract, by the way, on a sort of B team with the Vlasovs, with the Pelizzaris, of course, with even the Martinez?
I think Vlasov will leave. But fortunately for them, fortunately for him as well, I suppose, Jai Hindley is a very affable, amenable chap who doesn't seem to have too much of an ego. So I think he will be a model teammate, whatever he's asked to do. But certainly he's a rider who's good enough to be leading a pretty big team in Grand Tours. So it will be interesting. He might get Lipovitz'd, Danny. A few riders might get, or Pelizzari'd next year. Danny, I've got another note here, flops, GC flops. I think it would be probably unfair to put anyone in that category. Obviously, Ben O'Connor didn't have the race that he wanted, but that was largely due to a crash. Giulio Ciccone, well, his sort of checkered Grand Tour career continues. I suspect there'll be more soul searching, as there has often been with Ciccone in the winter, about whether he really is a GC rider, whether he wants to do that again in the future. Today, in this Vuelta, a bit like in the Giro in the spring, he started off looking like a genuine contender for the podium, and unfortunately, due to sort of misfortune, saddle sore this time, crashing the Giro, it didn't really pan out for him on either occasion. Danny, Philipsen as well deserves a mention for his three stage with Jay Vine. Another outstanding Vuelta for him with the King of the Mountains competition. Mads Pedersen rode another brilliant race, just sort of proving that he is everything sort of we thought Wout van Aert was two or three years ago. And team-wise, Ineos Grenadiers quietly, I suppose, took three stage wins. UAE with their seven. Danny, we also saw the kind of accentuation of another phenomenon we've seen a lot of the last few years, the concentration of the power in the hands of a few riders and teams, because we only, was it seven? Seven teams won?
Seven
stages?
Teams, yeah, that's true.
That was another theme that I don't think is going to, well, that's not going away either.
Is it true that we had two stages without a winner? So?
That's true, actually, Danny. Yeah, that's true. So seven stages, yeah. Danny, I suggest that we conclude this part there. The next thing you're going to hear is a little medley, a montage of some of the chaps with whom we have shared this journey over the last 3 weeks, talking about some of their likes and dislikes from this Vuelta a España. I should preface this by saying that most of them were recorded yesterday, and you'll hear some. You might hear a couple of references to protests. They obviously don't take into account what happened today, which I think was more grievous and more egregious than anything that had happened before today.
My name is Stefan King, riding for Groupama FDJ. The highlight was the first few days with the team. We were on a really good roll with the victory of David and the red jersey in the team time trial. So it really felt like Yeah, superstar to the Vuelta.
What have you not liked?
I didn't like that the race was influenced by exterior impact, because I think it's a nice race and the race itself deserves to be held from on the original route every day. But nevertheless, I want to say a big thank you to the organizer for handling the situation very well.
A place you've seen on the Vuelta that you would return to on vacation?
Wow. On vacation. I mean, the last place we were, actually it's not a place I would go on vacation because I've visited now, but we were in Olmedo, like 45 minutes south of Valladolid. You have the impression you're in the middle of nowhere, and then first of all we're in a nice hotel with like some thermal sources.
Nice bit of spa treatment.
Yeah, a little bit of spa. And then on an evening of the time trial, I went for a walk through the little village. It only has 3,500 inhabitants, but it was super beautiful, like very picturesque. And I think if you drive through it on the main road, you think, oh, nothing special, gas station, a coffee shop, but the village itself, it's a real beauty. And that's actually what I like about being a cyclist. Sometimes you get to places where you would never go to and you probably never go again, but you had the chance to see them.
My name is Søren Retz. I work for TV2 Denmark.
Søren, what have you liked about this Vuelta?
I always like the Vuelta. My best moment of this Vuelta, I think, is Mads Pedersen winning stage 15. We were waiting for that since stage one, and Mads is a very good guy to interview. He's always very good on TV, so that was something I was looking forward to.
What about our dinner in Logroño? What about our dinner in Logroño?
Oh yeah,
I was sure that was going to be the highlight.
Yeah, rest day dinner with you guys is always a favorite outside of the race. The day after wasn't that great though.
No, not for you. It was fine. I was sober as a judge. Søren, what have you not liked about this Vuelta?
All the demonstrations. I mean, I don't mind them demonstrating, but the times where they knocked over riders and course that the finish line was moved or the stage was neutralized, I really think that was a very dark spot on La Vuelta. And I know for some riders it kind of ruined the motivation and ruined the race. And I didn't like that at all.
Last thing, Søren, a place we have been to that you would gladly come back to.
There are a lot of places. Every Grand Tour I go to, I try to save 10, 15 hotels, nice places, places I would like to visit. And I've probably done 30 Grand Tours, hasn't come back to a single place yet.
Hey, my name is Jakub Odroba and I ride for Team Caffarural Seguros RGA. Best thing? I think the best experience was the Grande part in Italy, because there was so much people and the people were like loco, they were mad. And that was the biggest difference for me compared to the other races. So I think the Grande part in Italy was the best thing for me. The worst part of a race is, I think, was looking at the stages that are left in during the first week, you know, when you open the application with the stages and you see how much is left. That was the worst part for me.
Gregor Brown, Flow Bikes.
What have you liked about this Vuelta?
Seeing the team dynamics play out both for the good and the bad, and how that affects everything when you're trying to race for a general classification in cycling. Visma for the good and the terrible tactics of UAE, let's be honest, for the bad.
All right, Chris Horner. And what about, what have you not liked?
Listen, knucklehead. The protests have been kind of the sour point of the race, but also I sort of enjoyed them too, as we've talked about so many times, as part of cycling. Cycling goes everywhere around the world, and kind of the world collides with cycling, and cycling collides with the world, and that's what we've gotten here.
Where would you return to on vacation?
A couple places. The first, you know what I'm going to say because I'm going to struggle with the pronunciation.
Avila.
The second, anywhere along the Cantabrian coast, just doing a little bit of the Camino, seeing the cliffs and the waves crashing down below. It's magical and not touched often by tourists, I think.
Arno Marit, Enter Maché Watson.
Arno, what have you liked about this Vuelta a España?
For sure, the sprints. And
One highlight.
The third place in Zaragoza.
What have you not liked about this Vuelta?
The day before the time trial, I was super bad and it was a super hard mountain stage, combined with stomach problems, so that must be my low, yeah.
Place you've seen you would return to on vacation?
On vacation, I would say Angliru for hiking, but not for cycling.
Thanks.
Alistair Fotheringham, Cycling News.
Al, what have you liked about this Vuelta?
I liked the start in Italy. I thought it was a bit mad to go that far, but on the other hand, when we were there, there was some good racing. It was a nice vibe, and very well treated by the local organisation. And we saw some interesting places and got a chance to be in Turin. Well, all gets my vote.
What have you not liked?
Too many hockey stick stages, like all these summit finishes on after flat. I think they could, like, rather than having so many summit finishes, change it to sort of having some more with downhill sort of finishes off descents, things like that, like the one they had in Corrales de Buelna, was it?
Yeah.
Those are good, it got a bit kind of like formulaic.
A place you'd return to on vacation?
Galicia. Go there tomorrow. No problem.
I'm Kellen O'Brien. I'm in Team Jaco Alula here at La Volta 25. The best thing in this Vuelta. The fact that it's nearly over, maybe. I think overall the weather's been really good. It hasn't been too hot. Hasn't been too cold or wet, so we've been pretty lucky with the weather, so it's probably been the best thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was the worst thing of this weather so far?
The amount of food I had to eat. I'm so overeating. I cannot wait for tomorrow and I can stop eating food for a few days.
That's interesting. How was it?
Just some nights after the race when you have to eat like so much pasta or rice, I just, yeah. In the end, after 3 weeks, I'm ready to be done with the eating.
Could you tell us, like, how many pasta are you eating after just a regular stage?
Around 600 grams pasta for dinner.
Okay.
Pasta. So.
Okay, so let the listeners know how much pasta is that in terms of not grams, but in a plate.
Just the biggest plate of pasta you can imagine.
Lucas Naraka, EF Education.
Lucas, what have you liked? One thing that you've really loved about this Vuelta a España?
I think the Andorra stage, seeing lots of friends there, that was really cool. And then, racing. I just think, the amount of racing we do is so cool. Obviously, my first Grand Tour, so like just getting in the routine of it, and like seeing lots of new places. I mean, I think especially in the Basque Country, it was nice for me.
The racing every day, you love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's good and bad, but in general I've enjoyed it. The rest days also kind of like disrupt the rhythm a bit, so they're really nice and on the day, and then the next day sometimes you wake up and you're like, just to get going again takes a bit longer, and it hurts a bit more in the first 10-20k.
So apart from the rest days, what have you not liked about this Vuelta a España?
There are a few stages in the middle of the race where we were going for the breakaway and it just took so long for the breakaway to go. And I mean, I completely killed myself in the first 10, maybe even 50k. And then after that, I was just when is this breakaway going to go? And I was just racing on the limit. Like, I was even like thinking, oh, I'm going to get dropped. I'm not even going to make time cut anymore. And then luckily the race does ease up eventually, but there's some moments there where it did feel like an alien.
A place you've seen that you would return to on holiday?
Well, I think the stages we had around Bilbao, and we were really cool. I like that area a lot. I mean, we had obviously two or three stages around there, and when I raced there it was really cool, and even when I raced in San Sebastian earlier this year, every time I go back there I'm like, this is nice place to race.
Would you be on the beaches or would you be inland on the hills and in the mountains?
Depends when I'm going there. I think if I retire, I go to the beaches. But if I went right now, I'd be in the mountains a bit more. And I think the food there is exceptional, so it'd be good life.
Thank you very much.
Jack Haig, Bahrain Victorious.
Jack, what have you liked about this Vuelta?
This third week has been a little bit easier than maybe other Grand Tour third week, so it's been kind of nice. So I enjoyed that. Obviously, also riding for Thorsten when he was in the red jersey. Not only is it special to defend the Grand Tour leader's jersey, but I'm quite good friends with Thorsten. I'm really happy to see him personally do well.
Anything else, Jack?
Obviously, my daily routine of chatting to the both of you is up there with always the highest highlight of every single day of the day.
Say it with a bit more conviction. Jack, and what have you not liked?
I've had a few dislikes this Grand Tour, to be honest, mate. I didn't start with the best conditions with a bit of an inflamed tendon in my ankle, and then I got a bit sick after the Andorra stage, and I've sort of been struggling a little bit through that, and it's been a little bit... I don't really know the right word. Maybe like demoralizing to sort of be here but not be in the condition that I'd really like, and kind of feeling like I was going a bit from A to B, not being able to be an influential part of the race, which is something I enjoy. I enjoy to be at the front of the race. I enjoy to be sort of in critical moments and making a real big difference. And this Grand Tour, I've sort of struggled to be at the level to do this. So it's been a little bit frustrating.
Jack, a place you'd go back to on vacation that you've discovered on this Vuelta?
Unfortunately, mate, I've done a lot of Vueltas, so there's not too many places I discovered this Vuelta. But no, I always enjoy sort of Cantabria and Asturias. This area is beautiful. I think we had a couple of hilltop finishes there, and you have a good mix of the mountains and the coastline. It's a little bit quieter as well than other parts of Spain, so I've actually been there a few times with a camper van on holidays, and I really like this region of Spain.
Well, Danny, well, we're going to give a couple more of our, as I called them earlier, idiosyncratic likes, dislikes from this Vuelta a España. But Danny, before we do, I believe you've got a bit of an update.
Yep, we have an update. I mean, we have, at this time, 9:43 at the night, we have two persons arrested here at Madrid and 22 police officers that who has been damaged at the... At this point, so and we have a little statement from Jonas Vingegaard, who said that it's a pity that such a moment of eternity was taken from us. He is really disappointed about that, and he said, "I was looking forward to celebrate this overall win with my team and the fans."
Danny, we will be celebrating. We will be sort of marking the end of our Vuelta a España in the Mexican restaurant where we traditionally always end the Vuelta, round the corner, in a minute, because we finished our cocktails now. I've got a slightly dry mouth, as the listeners might be able to hear. But we are winding down, but we're going to do so, Danny, with some of our likes and dislikes from this Vuelta a España. Danny, would you like to go first? Some of them will be quick fire, but you will also be free to elaborate if you so wish. Danny, would you like to go first? Any likes or dislikes?
Okay, I'll go first. I mean, luckily, I've spent good times this third week of La Vuelta. Especially, you're going to allow me to do this, but being a listener of the pod and being here, it was great for me to be here. It was such a pleasure. But yeah, it was so fun to see how everything is done in the cycling podcast. And especially... out of the
fun, or sure you don't mean disappointing.
Out of the things that you can hear from your headphones, I mean the dinners or the funny stories that we have.
Don't just mention the dinners. Mention something that makes it sound like we work hard as well.
Don't tell the listeners where we are right now and what we are doing right now.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was definitely good for me. The weather and the food was so good, and. Should I go to the other side, to the worst?
You can go to the dark side if you want.
Okay. Beyond the protests and all the things that we have talked about, I mean, there are two things, one person and the other, unrelated to the race. Personally, I got quite sick in the car, to be honest. Not sick, but dizzy. Do you say dizzy?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, because...
Is this a comment on my driving?
Not at all. Neither on your... and. Neither to the other person who is driving on this Vuelta a España, and the other side not related with the race. It was so shocking for me to I was so shocked to when I see how much burn landscape we had on the Alto de Morredero. After recording that episode, I remember we saw a family of deers.
Yeah.
Indeed, in the mountain, and it was, to be honest, and just talking serious, so hard to see that. Despite cycling can give to you this kind of experience, I mean, show you the landscapes of a country. So it was kind of sad, but kind of grateful to cycling giving us the opportunity to see it.
Yeah, it was a bit of a metaphor for this Vuelta a España. Yeah, absolutely. The family of deer on the brutally burnt slopes of the Morredero, and indeed that whole stage. And, you know, something that our colleague Gregor Brown said in that little montage you heard earlier, and again, I would like to stress that was recorded before the protest today, but one thing that I think we all appreciate, certainly people who participate in the cycling podcast, certainly people who, you know, like you, Danny, people who we've tried to involve in the cycling podcast, I think we're all people who appreciate the fact that professional cycling, it touches more of the world.
Yep.
Than other sports, and it's not a stadium sport. And you know, this comes back to the conversation we had earlier on in the Vuelta a España. I think we were in Bilbao, it was that day in fact, about why professional cycling is maybe even more political than other sports, because it interacts and intertwines with the world and goings on, whether it's, you know, environmental damage or whether it's politics, it's country borders, more than other sports. And at the risk of sounding or feeling smug, sometimes it can seem like a slightly more adult sport than others for that reason, because our attention isn't consumed by, you know, what's happening immediately in front of our eyes, as I say, in a stadium. So, that is a bit of a metaphor, Danny, the Morredero. Danny, go ahead. Shall I give a couple of mine?
Yeah.
Okay. Thomas Silva's family. I've enjoyed them. What a loyal traveling band of supporters they've been. You spoke to them, Danny. You interviewed them a few days ago.
Álvaro, his father, was such a great person, yeah.
Yeah, the Uruguayans. Seen them at the road every day. In terms of locations, we had a great couple of days, Danny, when you arrived in Ribera wine country. Stayed in a beautiful monastery there. And that was in Galicia in the extreme northwest of Spain. A really gorgeous part of Spain. Well, we talked about the ugly architecture, but a naturally gorgeous part of Spain. Gorgeous wines there. Felix Gal, I've already mentioned Felix Gal. Got a lot of time for the way Felix Gal rode in this Vuelta a España. The contrast between UAE and Visma. We talked yesterday about how this has become a great rivalry in the same way that Vingegaard versus Pogacar has become a great rivalry. Fantastic contrasts in their styles, in their approaches, in their presentation. And as much as we can have mixed feelings about the wage gap, and sorry, the wealth gap in this sport, and we do have mixed feelings about that, I think this is a sort of dichotomy, duality, which has entertained us a lot already and will continue to entertain us, these two teams, although it was very good-natured at this Vuelta a España. A breakout rider. I enjoy the performances of Finley Pickering. I thought he rode a really brave Vuelta a España for Bahrain Victorious. I'm sure he will have, well, impressed a lot of, whether he stays at Bahrain or goes somewhere else. We talked earlier in the Vuelta about how he was out of contract. Well, I don't think he'll have any trouble securing his future. Little Trek, the way they rode, how committed they were. Okay, they didn't take as many stage wins as maybe they hoped, but I just love the way that they really go all in, as I've said many times, particularly when Mads Pedersen is riding. Likes, Danny, I like marking my 10 years, Danny, of doing every Grand Tour. This is the last, this is the finish line for me, 10 years of doing Grand Tours. And just had taken a few moments over the last couple of days to sort of appreciate that and sort of reflect on everything I've sort of seen and experienced over the last 10 years, largely thanks to the listeners of the Cycling Podcast. But I'm not sure I've got any big hot takes that I can give you about what I've seen in 10 years. I think that's a podcast for another day. But certainly I feel very grateful for that. Danny, likes the vast majority of people's reactions on social media. This has been a difficult Grand Tour for us for reasons touched on earlier on. We've had to wade into waters in which we are not accustomed, particularly comfortable. And I think that the vast majority of people have really appreciated the care we have taken. And Danny, I think, I hope you would vouch for this. You know, every sort of, every time we've had to confront the topic of the pro-Palestine protest, we've done it with a lot of sort of thought and care. We haven't always got it exactly right, but we've had a clear line, and that has been relaying what we've seen without betraying personal biases, personal agendas, personal feelings. And the vast majority of people, I think, have appreciated that. And, you know, we haven't had thousands of messages to that effect, but I think people's silence, I've certainly interpreted people's silence as a good sign, because yeah. I know this is a debate, this is an issue which really exercises people, as it should perhaps, but I think people have appreciated our attempts to remain neutral and objective, and also not to sort of go out of our lane. We have had to talk about it a lot, and there is no doubt that it's been the defining storyline of this Vuelta a España. It's what it will be remembered for, this Vuelta a España.
Absolutely.
Alongside Jonas Vingegaard's victory. And hopefully the amount of space that we've dedicated to it has reflected the space that it has occupied in the narrative of this Vuelta a España. Danny, dislikes. I have, for the same reasons that I've appreciated some people's reactions, I've really, to be honest, not appreciated being called a terrorist sympathizer and so on and so forth. I got some really nasty private messages, and I don't usually say this. I wouldn't usually talk about this on social media, but that has really aggrieved me, purely because I really feel as though we've taken a lot of care and thought about this a lot, and we've had endless conversations in the car and other times over dinner about how to do this properly. So I just for people to assume bad faith on my part, on our part, on all of our co-hosts' part, has really kind of stuck in my craw, as we say in English, Danny. Anyway, dislikes, UCI absence, I've already talked about that. Of course, I've already talked about that. One final one, I suppose. The Italian stages. Obviously, I'm a lover of Italy, lover of the Piemonte region, where this race started. And I thought that the courses were uninspiring, went to uninspiring places. I didn't understand why certain places had been chosen, certain courses had been chosen, either from a racing point of view or an aesthetic point of view. Does it matter? Is the future of, is Piemonte going to perish because the Vuelta a España didn't choose the right locations to visit in 2025 for its Gran Salida? I don't think so. However, that left a little bit of a sort of tinge of regret. Danny, on that note, we have reached the end of the road, the end of our Camino. And at this point, as always, at the end of Grand Tours, I'm going to give a few thanks, heartfelt thanks. First of all, Danny, I'm going to thank you for your sterling service over the last week, your sort of debut on a Grand Tour, and you've been extremely good company, fun company, easygoing, but extremely professional as well, and you have shown all of your sort of pedigree as a young aspiring journalist. I keep telling you there's no future in journalism, but if anyone's got a future, Danny, it's you.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Danny, for your company. Michele Pellacci, he kicked us off as I describe. I describe you as Michele Pellacci without the E numbers and the Coca-Cola earlier on in the Vuelta a España. But Michele did bring his effervescent, exuberant personality to the first week, and we had a great time with Pellacci, and I know the listeners will echo that. So thank you to you, Pellacci, if you're listening. It's probably past your bedtime. Going to thank Brian Nygaard as well. He did a cracking stint in the middle week, brought his insight and intellect as ever. Always great to have Brian on the podcast, so thank you, Brian. Going to thank Lucky Larry Warbass, the Motown maestro, Tudor Pro Cycling's Larry Warbass, who wasn't riding this year, but great news about Larry from Larry. He will be with Tudor Pro Cycling next year. That was announced. And the year after, in fact. That was announced a couple of days ago, so well done, Larry. We're all proud of you. Going to thank Lionel as well for his fantastic support back in the UK over the last few weeks. Lionel will be back in the autumn in the next few weeks after a fantastic stint that he did at the Tour de France. Our producers, John Mooney, Hugh Owen, Adam Bowie, Tom, Wally there at any time of the day, any time of the night, to provide assistance. Fantastic work they've done putting together the episodes in super quick time on this Vuelta a España. Tom, I think, is on duty tonight, but thank you to all of you guys. You've been fantastic as ever. Greg Andrews of Divine Cellars, who's curated our wine selection for this Vuelta a España. I believe it's still on sale. Those who enjoy that kind of thing will know where to find it. Thanks to our main sponsor for the last few weeks. That's Lloyds, Lloyds Bank. It's been fantastic to have them on board, and we are incredibly grateful for their support, which, well, helps us to be at the Grand Tours, helped us to cover this Vuelta a España, helped us cover the Tour of Britain. So thank you to them. On the same note, we are forever grateful to our friends of the podcast, those of you who follow us round the year, round the globe, or certainly round Europe. It's my 10th year of covering all the Grand Tours on the ground. Well, that applies to the podcast as well. This marks the end of the 10th year of daily coverage on the Grand Tours, and that is largely thanks to the friends of the podcast who continue to support us. Final thank you to Juanfran de la Cruz, my faithful Spanish correspondent, Vuelta historian, who's been peppering me, and I mean that in the best possible way, every day with tidbits, nuggets of information about Spain. Most of the time I've remembered to mention him. Sometimes I've used his information without mentioning Juanfran, but sincere thanks to him as well for his help during this Vuelta a España. I hope I haven't forgotten anyone, but Danny, if I have, I will try to redeem myself in some other way in the future. Danny, we are going to disappear into the night. The Mexican restaurant down the road is calling, and I don't know when I'll be back. I'm having a holiday this week in Portugal, and Segovia tomorrow night, but I'll be back soon as well. Danny, on that note, thank you once again, and buenas noches.
Thank you, gracias, y hasta otra.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.